Hello, I am Pete Real, a high school English and Spanish teacher, an avid reader, and an aspiring writer. Thank you for listening to the Chills at Will podcast, in which we explore the visceral beauty of literature and its connection to our culture, our history, and ourselves. Hello and welcome to episode 122 of the Chills of Will podcast. An absolute pleasure to be joined by Sonora Reyes. A little bit about Sonora. Born and raised in Arizona, Sonora Reyes is the author of the forthcoming contemporary young adult novel, The Lesbiana's Guide to Catholic School. They write fiction full of queer and Latinx characters in a variety of genres, with current projects in both kid-lit and adult categories. Sonora is also the creator and host of the Twitter chat, hashtag QPOCC chat, a monthly community building chat for queer writers of color. Sonora currently lives in Arizona in a multi-generational family home with a small pack of dogs who run the place. Outside of writing, Sonora loves dancing, singing karaoke, and playing with their baby nephew. How are you today?
I'm awesome. How are you?
Great. It's so cool to talk to you. I mean, pack of dogs, what are we talking, like 40 or like four?
It's only three, but they act like they're a lot.
So before we get into all the great stuff, well, I'm gonna start with great stuff. You had an incredibly good Ace Ventura reference in the book, I think.
I don't remember.
so Bo is being like all like James Bondy, trying to get into the house to get the clothes.
Yeah.
And the line is, if I'm not back in 5 minutes, just wait longer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which, you know, someone of my generation, that's a Ace Ventura reference. That was, yeah, a great one. I don't know if you knew it from that or what, but nicely done.
Yeah, sorry. Sometimes I forget about the stuff I wrote. I wrote it a while ago.
I understand. Of course. That's on page 295 for those reading at home. Great, great reference. I'd love to know about growing up in Arizona. In your acknowledgments or the note at the end, you write about writing since, you know, age 8. And I'd just love to know your relationship with literature, with reading, with language.
Yeah, so I did write my first attempt at a book was at age 8. It was really only like one chapter that ever ended up seeing the light of day. And my mom was very encouraging about it, even though I don't know why she wasn't concerned about it, because honestly, the main character's name was just my middle name and the main character's parents won the lottery and then died, leaving the kid all rich.
Oh. Okay.
So if I was my mom, I would have been like, are you okay? What's going on here? But my mom was like, this is so amazing. And she was like really supportive about it.
So that's pretty dark from a young age, but very clever. And
I was I just wrote whatever. Yeah. So and like my journals, you wouldn't want to read my journals from back then. They were very dark. Yeah. Just like me being super emo about nothing. I liked writing a lot for a really long time, but mostly I was into poetry.
Nice.
Up until, like, I didn't actually write a full-length novel until I wrote The Lesbiana's Guide to Catholic School. It was my first one.
Whoa.
But I wrote fan fiction before then.
Okay.
I wrote some pretty long fan fiction, like, that could be a book if I, like, made it into one. But
right.
Lesbiana's Guide was my first, like, actual book.
What was the fan fiction based on? Was this, like, anime? Was this like Harry Potter?
It was Young Justice.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Yeah, I was a huge DC nerd.
Oh, nice. You know, like when you wrote that one at 8 years old, you know, I just remember probably at a little bit later age, but just like the magic of like creating a story that, you know, that was not what you wanted to happen, I don't assume, right? That wasn't.
Yeah, no, it wasn't.
Right? I mean, that was fiction. That was, though it had the same, you know, middle name, like that was a totally made up story. Like, what does that feel like even up to this day when, you know, I know there, I'm sure there are from some parallels to your life or people, you know, and what you've read, but just the idea of like, you know, people are talking about Bo as if Bo's a real person. We're going to talk about Bo as if she's real, as if Yami, you know, how does that feel to just like create something out of, you know, out of thin air almost?
It's awesome. I love it. Especially because like these people in this book are like, they're not me, but like I've put little pieces of myself into every single one of them. And so then when they can like become a fully realized character that then people can talk about, like it's a real person or like have like favorites or whatever. It's just really cool.
Oh man. The you're talking about being into poetry when you're younger. Did I love that Saul Williams reference? Like, you know, Jamal was into Saul Williams. Yeah. I got a Twitter like from him recently.
Oh wow,
that made my day, right? It was like a, you know, he was liking something of someone. It was like a third hand, but I'll take it.
Yeah.
But what were you, you know, what were you reading growing up, poetry or not?
Honestly, I didn't do a lot of reading growing up. I started reading. So I did read a little bit, like with my dad, we read like Harry Potter together, when I was really young. And then I read The Hunger Games.
Of course.
Of course, the big ones. But I didn't start reading things that weren't like big, huge blockbusters until I started writing The Lesbiana's Guide.
Oh, wow.
Like after I wrote it, cause I wrote that without having written, without having read many other books, like books. And then I was like, I should probably be a reader if I'm going to try to be a writer. So I like started picking up other books like that are more recent.
Right.
And started really like getting into that. I got into one of the first books I picked up after like my lifelong reading slump was Labyrinth Lost by Zoraida Cordova.
Okay, yeah.
And I really loved that one. Had like a queer person of color protagonist, and that always makes me very happy.
Yes.
So yeah, and then I read Don't Date Rosa Santos by Nina Moreno. That was a really good one too. Okay. So those are like a couple of the first books that like kind of got me going.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there was like any sort of advantage that you didn't necessarily read a lot of the same genre, like in writing it? Was it, did you kind of come in with like fresh ideas or fresh eyes, you know?
I think there's both advantages and disadvantages. Like, I think I got really lucky that I was able to write a coherent book without having read much. But I think that's probably because I read a lot of fan fiction and I like watched a lot of media and like stuff like that. So I like knew how to write a story, like how a story could wrap up and all of that. But yeah, I guess not reading a lot probably made for, I don't know. It maybe because I was writing in a hurry because I was writing for NaNoWriMo, National Novel Writing Month. It was probably good for me to not be in my head about trying to compare myself to anyone else.
Okay.
And then afterwards during revision is when I started reading more. So I could like learn from things and kind of incorporate what I've learned into the revisions.
That makes sense. Tell me about the Novel Writing Month. What's the cool acronym or what's the cool name for it again?
NaNoWriMo.
Exactly. Yeah. Was that like, I mean, was that just like a built-in prompt for you or were you already working on the novel?
So I actually decided to, there had been several years where I wanted to participate and write a book in a month. But I just never got around to it until 2018. And I decided to do it on like October 20th or something like that.
Oh,
and I was like, I didn't know what to write. I didn't have any story ideas. And so I had to like really quick brainstorm. And I was like, I got to write something that I know intimately because otherwise I'll have to do all this research and like all that. So I decided to write about Catholic school and here we are.
As a fellow Catholic schooler, went to you know, Catholic high school. I just wonder, yeah, how much that, what the experience was like for you and how that really did inspire or, you know, lead to the book.
Yeah. So there was a lot that I didn't realize I needed to still process. When I was writing the book, I ended up processing a lot of stuff that I didn't realize I hadn't really truly healed from Catholic school. And like, there were good moments and bad moments, but, and I like include both like highs and lows in the book, but I think a lot of it, a lot of my own experience, I just had to write about some of those hardships in order to like kind of have that catharsis and like heal from it. And I think it was basically like therapy for me.
That's great. Oh, that's so cool to hear. Did, you know, like Yami in the book is bilingual. I would say she probably doesn't speak Spanish extremely well, but she speaks it well. And, you know, her father had been deported to Mexico. So I just wonder, like, with yourself, as far as language, did you grow up speaking only English, like sprinkled in with Spanish? Were you bilingual? Are you bilingual?
Yeah. So Spanish was technically my first language. I lost it after a while. And now we're speaking Spanish again in the house.
Nice.
Because my sister had kids. And so we want them to know Spanish. So we're only speaking Spanish to the kids.
Yes.
So I understand Spanish fully, and I can speak it pretty well, but I don't speak it as well as like my parents.
But yeah, I mean, I like how, like, you know, I mean, it's just thrown in. I think, you know, Spanglish is one of the 8 wonders of the world, how smoothly how people do it, you know, and just throwing it in. And yeah, you know, some of the chapters are todo en español, not some of the chapter names. Uh-huh. Right. Oh, very interesting. Cool. In reading fan fiction and reading what you did growing up, did you feel represented, you know, with all the million different cultures and subcultures that we come from? Did you feel like you saw someone like yourself in what you read?
Not in what I read. As far as fan fiction goes, if I wanted to feel represented, I would have to look up fan fiction of a specific character that was like me.
Okay.
But then doing that, a lot of the time you could tell, like, there weren't any characters like me that I really gravitated towards in fan fiction. Like, the closest is Jaime Reyes, the third Blue Beetle, okay, who I love just because he, you know, he's great. And he's not queer or anything, but he's Mexican. And when I look at fan fiction of him, I can tell is like written by white people. You know what I mean? Like trying to lean into his culture.
Okay.
Like just the way that Spanish is used and the way that it just sounds not right.
Okay.
Like forced kind of. So it didn't necessarily make me feel very represented. But now I do feel represented in what I'm reading these days, because I can find like plenty of books. Like it might be kind of hard for people to like find the books, uh-huh, mostly, but like there's so many coming out these days that are like super queer, super like Mexican, or, you know, just like,
right.
I'm really enjoying the amount of like queerness that there is.
That's awesome.
At the forefront right now.
That's so cool. Let's get into the book. The title is like, yep, jumps off the cover. It's a great cover art.
Thank you.
I wonder the seeds for the book, like, you know, did the title come first? I mean, you talked a little bit about it, but like, was it jogged by like a writing exercise? You know, how did you really decide to do this and to call it what you did?
Yeah. So, my cousin actually came up with the title.
Oh,
yeah.
Royalties.
So I had come up with the book before I wrote the book before I ever had any kind of title. She read the book. And so the original title was, it was not The Lesbiana's Guide to Catholic School, it was The Marimacha's Guide to Catholic School, which I really liked, but I thought maybe some people might be offended by it, or maybe people just wouldn't know what it meant. So then I changed it to The Lesbiana's Guide to Catholic School, just so that it'll be a little bit easier to, you know, people who don't speak Spanish would know, oh, it has the word lesbian in it, so.
Right. The cognate's pretty easy there.
Yeah.
Oh man, how about the cover art?
Yeah, so it's Jessie Gung, that's the cover designer. So she did an amazing job. I'm really, really happy with it. It was basically like from the first sketch, like I knew it was gonna be like amazing. Mm-hmm. Like it hasn't changed much since the first sketch.
It's that's just cool.
I think the only thing we changed is we made her like smirking with like an eyebrow raised.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it's been mostly the same.
Well, the eyebrows, or I guess the eyeliner is a big deal, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yami had to get that right. The first chapter and most, if not all the chapters have like a Ten Commandments kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Thou shalt not type of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was that a pretty direct nod to the Catholic school and like biblical reference?
Yes. So originally, there were no chapter titles in my first draft.
Okay.
And then when I was querying, a couple of different agents suggested that there should be chapter titles that leaned into the guide aspect.
Lesbiana's
Guide Catholic School.
Right.
And then I came up with the idea of making them like Ten Commandments style, because it's like a guide, but it's also Catholic and bringing it together.
That makes sense. The book starts off with Yami, which is short for Yamilet, right? She's angry from the visit, or she's angry from Bianca. They had a breakup, like a friendship breakup, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she's, you know, Yami goes off on like the mirrors and like the furniture, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. And then, you know, there's this idea like early on in the book that Catholic school is an escape. Caesar or Cesar, her brother. Is he Cesar or is he Caesar?
Cesar, yeah.
Cesar, right? Yeah. And just the idea that, quote, you can ask personal questions exactly once, like, mm-hmm. between the brother and, you know, brother and sister. And they have a beautiful relationship, but there's, you know, early on we get this idea that, quote, hiding my pain is one thing I'm good at.
Mm-hmm.
And just that they're, you know, they're joking with each other and they're very honest in some ways, but I'm not gonna say it's surface level, but it's, you know, like a lot of us, it's like, all right, at first, here's what I'm gonna tell you and that's it.
Yeah.
And you can maybe tell someone from a raised eyebrow and, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
How would you describe the mother and her religious connections? And tell us about the hallway of shame.
Yeah. So you've got the hallway of shame, which is basically just like a hallway full of like crosses and Jesus pictures and all that.
Yeah.
She's very religious and she raised her kids very religious. But she's also like got way too much on her plate, so she doesn't have time to take them to church every Sunday anymore, so they are kind of like out of that. So to her, bringing them to Catholic school is the perfect way to make up for the fact that she can't take them to church anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, she loves God.
Yes, she does. And you know, and Papi was deported when Yami was 10.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're, you know, they FaceTime and they do the video chats and mm-hmm. all, you know, text as much as they can. And he's, you know, in the beginning, he's very supportive. He's, mm-hmm. Obviously she misses him like crazy and the whole family does.
Yeah.
But, you know, it doesn't seem like there's a chance of him coming back, unfortunately. Yami's only what, like a year and a half older than Cesar?
Yeah. 10 months, actually.
10 months. Right. But yeah, she's
they're very close.
Right. But they're like they're in the same class. He skips ahead. She's a lot is expected of her. I wonder how much of that is her being the oldest daughter, about her just being a girl in general. Like how much of her, like, you know, being, you know, if Cesar messes up, it's on Yami.
It's a little bit of both. Like, yes, she's the oldest, so there's automatically more responsibility put on her.
Right.
But also, like, especially in like, I think this is a thing kind of like with like a I'm not trying to stereotype myself, but like a lot of like Mexican moms will be like harsher on the girls than they are on the boys, you know? So it's just kind of like a trend that I kind of wanted to touch on a little bit.
Yeah. Makes sense. And Cesar also, like, to make things better or make things worse, I mean, he's very charismatic, right? He can kind of like get away with anything. He's got a great smile, you know, always, you know, melting his mom's heart. And so he's, you know, he seems to be mischievous at the beginning. He's always seen, or more so, he's getting into fights and, you know, that kind of thing. So the Catholic school for him seems to be also a good, you know, like fresh start, right?
Yeah.
Yami describes herself as like the damsel in distress for Bianca, who was her former friend, who's kind of like the superhero.
Mm-hmm.
Well, tell us about what led to their friendship breakup.
Yeah. So Yami sees herself as kind of like, well, first she says she's the sidekick to Bianca's superhero. And then she's like, no, I'm not even the sidekick. I'm the damsel in distress. The superhero has to come and save. But now when they break up, she realizes like she's her own hero and she doesn't have to be like the damsel in distress or the sidekick or anybody but who she is. With Bianca, this technically happens before the book starts.
Right.
But their friendship breakup is because she got rejected and outed by Bianca to all their friends. And that's why she wants to go to Catholic school, because she wants to get away from Bianca and get away from that spreading rumor and start fresh and have a new school where nobody knows her, where she can go back into the closet.
Right.
And she decides she's not going to fall in love again. And you know how that goes. So.
You know, back to the brother-sister relationship, Cesar's really takes seriously the Mayan code of the heart, right? And he has like a framed picture of it, the poems. Help me, in Lakech Alakin. In Lakech Alakin is the living code of the heart, right? And that's huge throughout the book. What does it mean? Like, I guess, what does it mean literally? And what does it mean to you or to the characters?
Yeah, so... growing up, this was something that I heard a lot, the code of the heart and the poem. So I'll just say the poem really quick and like jump it into English.
Please.
So in Lakesh Alakin, tú eres mi otro yo, you are my other me. Si te hago daño a ti, if I do harm to you, me hago daño a mí mismo, I do harm to myself. Si me amo y respeto, or si te amo y respeto, if I love and respect you, me amo y respeto yo, I love and respect myself. So that's something kind of growing up, I was kind of, I grew up with that.
Okay.
And I wanted to put it in here, especially for Cesar. I kind of thought it would be interesting to have him be the one that was so obsessed with it, because he gets into fights, you know what I mean? And there's a reason for that. And I will just leave it at that. He's living by the code. We'll just say that.
Right. Right. We talked about the mother is really into Catholicism. She does not, in the abstract, she does not, you know, respect, or she does not feel that homosexuality is appropriate or moral. And, you know, we don't know about the father's ideas in the beginning, but he's poised as the one, or he's positioned as the one who questions everything, right? He's politically aware. He taught the family about their Mayan roots, or Mexican roots at least, right? And, you know, indigenous roots. And he, like I said, he's very politically active, politically aware. And I think that, you know, Yami gets a lot of that, of course, as the Cesar, right? Question everything, or at least question a lot of things, right?
Yeah.
So Yami goes to the school, to the Catholic school, and her first day, she connects with Bo. Bo is, well, see, some of the friends, quote unquote, that Yami seems to make, like Karen, great name, by the way.
Right.
Was that an accident or?
was what an accident
was Karen an accident, you know what I mean? The name Karen has a lot of connotations these days.
It's funny because I named her before like all this stuff
okay
was happened. But yeah, it was, so that was kind of an accident.
It worked out pretty well, right?
Yeah,
but you know, the friends are at the very least they're suspect. Like Karen, there's you know, there are veiled or straight racist comments, like, you know, calling Yami ghetto on one of the days when she comes in with like the big hoop earring. You know, Yami's all proud of herself and loves the way she looks. But she connects to Bo. And I mean, there's in the first couple of days, I think, or at least weeks, right? I mean, Bo stands up in class and she is, you know, very politically active, questions everything. This is a Catholic school.
Yep.
She questions, you know, she basically is like, I love that scene where it's like they're going to quote unquote, you know, debate like same-sex marriage. And Bo's like, well, it's legal. Like, what's the, you know what I mean? It's not like, oh, this is going to happen. It's like, this is legal. Why are we? And, you know, she gets into the principal's office a few times, but she does not care. Right.
Yeah.
She does not care. There's so much about what makes the book so good is that, you know, I think that someone like me can know intellectually, like, okay, the idea of like passing as, let's say, passing as straight, like I could understand. I've heard, I've read, I've known, you know, I know how tough that can be, but you just, through your writing, it's just so, the reader gets the idea of just how much like emotional exercise it is, right?
Yeah.
The daily, you know, don't say this, don't say that, you know, she ends up getting the beard, as is referenced in the book, right? Like the fake boyfriend, which is not like you would normally think. It's like a double twist, right? This is a very clever twist, like in a double way. You know, Hunter, who's kind of like the classic, like, you know, jock, good looking, but he's also kind of shy, but he's like, he's a good dude.
Yeah.
You know, so when he kind of like, when he wants to be boyfriend, girlfriend with Yami and she's like, no, everyone's kind of like, what, you know?
Yeah.
Right. Bo, who is out and out lesbian, you know, and she's just being nice to Yami, and Yami's like, I'm straight.
Yeah.
Right. that really, you know, throws
Yami is such a mess.
Right. And, you know, there's some great things. I think maybe you're going to read a little later about just like living a lie according to Yami. And just the idea of like, Yami's able to see Bo as open and out and unafraid, and she can't be. I'm talking too much here. This is your book. But so I'd love to know about, I love to know about the Bo character. You know, she is Chinese American. She's been adopted by white parents. She lives, you know, in a real rich area and lives the, you know, a plush lifestyle, but is also extremely active politically, socially. I love to know, it's such a cool character. I love you to know where Bo came from.
Thank you. So Bo came from, in the first draft, she was a lot different than she is now. I'll admit she was maybe a little bit manic pixie dream girl at first. She's definitely more fleshed out now, and I love her so much.
Right.
But I knew I wanted Bo to just be the epitome of like everything Yami wanted to be but was afraid of.
Yes.
So like they're kind of each other's foils in the sense that like Bo helps Yami to see like what the best case scenario is of like what can happen, what is possible if you do decide to come out. Like there is proof that like someone is okay and someone is thriving, and maybe that could be Yami too. So she gets to kind of live vicariously through Bo, but also I think it also shows that Yami is like, when she's not ready yet, she's like afraid of being like Bo, you know. So she doesn't want to be too much like Bo,
right?
So she does.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh man, I love her parents. I love just like the idea of them as characters. Yeah. Right. I think a lot of us know people like they're great. They're great overall, right? But I just kind of laughing, you know, they're so like open-minded, you know, and just like
both parents.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And just like they kind of like the cool parents, you know, making the dad jokes and, you know, trying too hard. But there's, you know, really interesting kind of going with the idea of not quite passing, but the really interesting and really well done in that you have them go to Ballet Folklorico, mm-hmm. right? Like the family plus Yami. Mm-hmm. And Yami is able to really, see her people. She feels like an ancient connection. She talks about, I may not speak the language extremely well, but she talks about a connection, right?
Right.
And the idea of seeing like the parents be two of very few white people in the crowd, mm-hmm. and not like haha, but like, it's nice for you to know what it's like. But just the idea too of Bo, how she feels jealous. What is it about the folklorico incident or event that makes Bo feel jealous? And
yeah, so I think with Bo, she's grown up with this white family that she loves, but they can't help her to explore her heritage as much as they want to.
Right.
As much as they like, their heart's in the right place, but mm-hmm. they're a little cringy with how they try to help her connect with her culture right. by like, getting all these like Chinese decorations and like all of that. And to Bo, it just doesn't feel authentic. It doesn't feel right because it's being done by white people.
Right.
So no matter what they do, it just feels like she's almost stealing her culture instead of just experiencing it. And so she is jealous of Yami in that moment when they go to see Baile Folklorico, because Yami is so in her element and she sees people like her. She sees all these other Mexican people who look like Yami.
Uh-huh.
And she gets to like just experience her culture in such an authentic way. And Bo has never felt that before. She's never been able to live her own like heritage. And so that's kind of when Bo decides that she wants to try exploring for herself, like outside of her parents.
Right. Great writing by someone named Sonora Reyes. You may know Sonora. This is from Bo. This is from Bo. Quote, "You just belonged, you know?" And quote, mm-hmm. "They just don't know what it's like to not be white in a place full of white people. There's decorations and stuff like that, and she appreciates it, but you use the word cringy, that's pretty good." Were you into folklorico as a kid or even now?
Yeah, as a kid, yeah.
My daughter is Michoacana on mom's side, and I want her to be a tamboraza.
Ooh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think that's the coolest thing ever, but she hasn't started yet, but she's only 6. Maybe we can get her into that.
Oh, yeah. I got into it when I was 5, and I haven't done it.
Okay.
Since, but
okay.
I did it when I was very young.
You know, of course, again, religion is clearly a theme in the book, and going to a Catholic school, they do confession. I was trying to think if we ever did confession like as a school, definitely in grade school, but there are very real ramifications of some of the way that some Catholics look at homosexuality, right? I mean, there's some very mm-hmm. scary things and things that make people feel very, very upset mm-hmm. and ashamed. You have the scenes with like the confessions and the biblical verses, and I love how, Bo is not having it. Mm-hmm. Bo is ready with her own biblical verses and, how about this and how about that? I just wonder about the idea of not just the mom's religion, but like religion overall as a theme in the book.
So I really wanted to talk about Catholicism specifically in a way that, so for Yami, she's going through this kind of like religious trauma.
Hmm.
But the people around her are not necessarily her mom is very religious and Bo is even Catholic. Bo's parents are Catholic.
Right.
And like they are able to make peace with that. And I want, maybe I'm saying too much, but I would like to write another book in this universe.
Okay.
I don't know if it would ever be published. If I did, it would be through Seth's perspective. Yeah. So if I ever write that, fingers crossed, we'll see. But I would like to like even explore a little bit more about like his relationship to Catholicism.
Right.
And how that affects everything in their life.
Well, yeah. So obviously there's the sexism or unfair expectations on Yami just as a woman, as a girl, but you also do a great job with, you know, with Sessa, right? There are different burdens on males, right? They're expected to be one type of masculine. You know, this of course is all stereotypical. Not everyone, subscribes to that, but he definitely has those different challenges. Right. And where, you know, the father seemingly would be somebody who would be more accepting of different types of masculinity, but you know, not necessarily always.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You did a great job with Cesar's shame and Cesar's personality. I would love to read a book from his point of view, because he's such an interesting character. He's so lovable, right?
Yeah, I love him. He's like probably my favorite character.
Yeah. And Bo, of course, is a great character too. And she has had the kind of the official coming out. And so Yami does a couple different ones kind of throughout, right? Mm-hmm. And that was another thing that I think he did so well in this book, is just this idea that, again, we can know this intellectually, that it's not like someone comes out one time and boom, yeah, that's done. Mm-hmm. You really write very lightly about how that would be something that's almost like a daily thing or a monthly, yeah. You know, right? It happens multiple times. Mm-hmm. I wonder about, and I would love to talk so much more about the book, but we're gonna keep away some of the spoilers.
Okay.
Right? Other than that, Bo is a great character. She's a great friend for Yami. Other than that, you know, it's not all happy endings, but there are some, right? Not all. But I wonder, the book comes out, we're talking May 7th, it comes out on the 17th. I just think this book would be so great for so many people.
Thank you.
Right? Just, you know, whether they have similar, you know, backgrounds to Yami or to Bo or not. Mm-hmm. Such a good book. I wonder what kind of feedback you've gotten maybe from teenagers, from older people, just in, you know, hasn't been published yet. I mean, hasn't come out yet, but just in the pre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been mostly positive. I have had a couple of teenagers like email me and reach out to me and just like tell me like how much they liked it. And that really made me happy.
Nice.
Nice. So definitely like really makes my day when that happens.
Yeah. Was I mean, I got to figure a lot of people are being seen.
Yeah.
You know, through reading this book.
I hope so.
I would love to hear, and we would all love to hear some of this great book that we've been talking about. We've just been paraphrasing it. I'd love to hear an excerpt.
Yeah. Let me pull it up. So I'll read an excerpt that's from the scene we were talking about, the Baile Folklorico scene.
Okay.
So Yami is with Bo and her parents at a Baile Folklorico show.
Sorry, before you start, awesome. I love the idea too. Those were their Christmas gifts, right?
Yeah. It was the Christmas gift. So basically, instead of giving each other presents for Christmas, they decided to give each other experiences.
Yes.
So like they all choose like what they want to do, and then they all go do it together.
So Generation Z, right?
Yeah.
Experiences. We want experiences. I love it.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah. Are you ready?
Ready.
Okay. Everyone is smiling right now and I can breathe. It's not like I need their approval, but it's nice to see Bo and her parents enjoying themselves. After everything they've done for me, I want to give something back. I want them to fall in love with the colors and the music and the clothes and the dancing the way I did when I was little. I used to do baile folklorico. My mom signed me up when I was young, and I still regret quitting to this day. I don't think I was any good at it, but I was 5, so no one was. I always felt so beautiful tapping my feet and swinging my skirt around my waist. That was how I learned to stand straight and smile and look presentable, which ironically is why some people used to tell me I act white. But the people who taught me to dance are the same people who taught me about the cultures of our indigenous ancestors. I know a lot about baile folklorico. I know a lot of baile folklorico came out of a mixture of Spanish and indigenous cultures and dances. I'm fully aware that the standing up straight and smiling was probably more from the Spanish side, but baile folklorico isn't all about the posture and the smiles. It's about the music, the colors, the dance. It's a dance of Mexican pride, my people, my heart. I may not know the languages of my ancestors. I may not know much about them at all. Colonization will do that to a people. But when I'm watching my people dance, when I see my own skin on the stage, There's something about the joy on their faces and in their bodies that feels ancient somehow. And I feel like my ancestors have been with me all along. I can almost see them here dancing with us.
Wow. I love that idea. You know, it's not, there's so many important themes in the book and they're not like heavy handed or like simplistic, but just the idea, even that simple, like that's what colonization has done, right?
Yeah.
That Yami would love to be able to speak Spanish 100% and be bilingual and have closer connections, but that's what colonization's mm-hmm. brought. It's not her fault.
Yeah.
Right. And this idea of like the ancient and just the heart, which of course connects to the Mayan poems and such. Thanks so much for sharing that. I really appreciate that.
Yes. Thank you.
You said maybe Cesar gets his, you know, his shine. What else are you working on?
So right now I'm working on, my second book comes out in 2023.
Okay. I didn't know that. Congrats.
Yeah. So I'm going to be announcing more about it very soon, nice. But, I can't say too much about it, but I will say is a like hashtag Me Too revenge book with a queer autistic protagonist.
Wow.
Yeah.
Prolific back to back years.
Yeah, I'm really excited.
Oh man. Wow. Congratulations that to get one great book out into the world. Now there's a second one coming really soon. That's exciting.
Thank you.
Very cool. Oh, shout out your, you know, social media and all that and where we can, any particular bookstores in Arizona or any other areas that you'd recommend?
I recommend Changing Hands. There's one location in Tempe and there's another location in Phoenix.
Okay.
Both in Arizona. I love that bookstore. The one in Phoenix has a bar called First Draft.
Whoa.
And it's like people go there and write and stuff.
Oh, nice.
So that's really cute. Yeah. And then you asked about socials.
Mm-hmm.
So my Twitter is at Sonora Reyes, SonoraReyes.
Okay.
And then my Instagram and TikTok are sonora.reyes.
How's TikTok going?
I don't really post anything on there. I just go watch the videos.
Do you can answer if you don't want to. Do you dance more like Bo or more like Yami?
Do I dance more like Bo or Yami?
Yeah. Yami.
Yeah, Yami.
That's what we love about Bo, right? She's not the greatest, but she loves it. She has fun with it, right?
Yeah, she loves it.
We can all aspire to be like Bo and be like Yami.
Definitely. Yes.
Well, huge, huge great luck with the book that comes out in 10 days. I'll be in my little corner of the world promoting it like crazy and sharing this book. It's a great book and it's an important book. I think so many teenagers and others will see themselves in the book and it's like, how cool is that? So congratulations.
Thank you so much.
It's been such a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, you too.
What a pleasure it's been today to speak with Sonora Reyes. Continue good luck with the writing. So looking forward to following Sonora's career. Thank you for listening to episode 122 with Sonora Reyes. You can now subscribe to the podcast on Apple and leave a 5-star review. You can also ask for it by name using Alexa and find it on Stitcher, Spotify, and on Amazon Music, though I'm really phasing out those last two recently. Follow me on Instagram where I'm at Chills at Will Podcast, or on a Twitter that hopefully continues to be Elon Muskless, where I'm at Chills at Will PO1. You can watch this and other episodes on YouTube through the Chills at Will Podcast channel. This is a passion project of mine, a DIY operation, and I'd love for your help in promoting what I'm convinced is a unique and spirited look in an often ignored art form. The intro song for the Chills at Will Podcast is Wind Down Instrumental, and the other song played on the episode was Hoops Instrumental by Matt Whitehour, and both songs are used through archesaudio.com. Please tune in for episode 123 with Zach Harper. Zach is a staff writer for The Athletic, covering the NBA, and he joined after covering the NBA for ESPN.com, CBS Sports, and FRS Sports since 2009. He also hosts radio for SiriusXM NBA and SiriusXM Mad Dog Sports Radio. And Zach and I have a shared alma mater, Go Big Red. That episode will air on May 17th. For now, thanks again for listening, and I hope that these quarantine days bring you texts by writers with mad skills like Sonora Reyes, whose work, like The Lesbiana's Guide to Catholic School, gives you chills at will.
Thank you.